the late 80s, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the podcast Pat Trek. My continuing mission to introduce my friend Patrick to the best show that ever ran on television, and to boldly go where millions of white guys with glasses have gone before.
Hello, welcome to Pat Trek. This is the show where my friend Pat O'Rourke introduces me, Patrick Winiger, to Star Trek The Next Generation, a show that I've not seen.
And I have seen it a ton of times. And Patrick, frankly, I love this episode.
It was all right.
But, you know,
I know you're sick of hearing that.
I am sick of hearing that, especially after I'm still riding high because last week you gave the episode Set to Kill.
It was a low Set to Kill.
Well, hey.
But it was still pretty good.
It got there. It got there.
You can't say that it's a low Set to Kill. It's a scale of 1 to 3, and you can't say a low 3.
Right. And that voice you're hearing right now is our friend Zach Mast. Hey, Zach.
Hi, everybody. How are you? Sorry that the first thing you had to hear from me was criticizing Patrick's relativism.
All right, that is true. You either kill someone or you don't.
Right.
But this was me hesitating between do I stun or kill, and finally I decided on kill.
Well, you're convicted of murder, but it's a low murder.
It's a low murder.
So,
well, there are degrees of murder.
You might not have done
true.
It.
I guess that's true.
So the episode we're talking about this week is called When the Bow Breaks.
Yep.
Yeah. So we nailed it. We got the episode title out there.
We got the episode title in the actual episode.
We don't always do that, Zach.
No, sometimes we forget.
Yeah, and we're deep in before we say what episode we're talking about. Guess what is the very interesting little tidbit about this one?
Oh, yeah, a little production note.
This is the very first episode of the series that doesn't have a teaser with an external shot of the Enterprise. So we don't see where the Enterprise is at the beginning of the episode. We start right away in that hallway we see all the time.
Well, that kind of makes sense, though.
Right.
Because they're not actually like near anything interesting.
Not that we can see.
Right.
Right.
I mean, you don't need the establishing shot of they're in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
Right.
So, yep, that's the fact.
I mean, maybe that adds information. They should have done that because we learned that the thing was cloaked, right? So then maybe we think they're in the middle of nowhere, but they're really not. Could have been a nice little storytelling.
Well, I like the way they...
You're going to ding them for that?
They set it up with the child running down the hallway. Well, but Zach, we'll get to that.
Right, okay.
We'll get to that.
For now, we're going to do Patrick's Log. This is what was going on in the regular news, not the Star Trek news, on February 15th, 1988. That was the day that this episode aired. So I got the New York Times News of the Week summary. Moscow's proposal for a withdrawal from Afghanistan has led to negotiations about the wisdom of demanding that a coalition government be established before an agreement is signed. Hey guys, how'd that turn out? What happened in Afghanistan?
As far as I know, super successful.
Right, yeah, everything turned out okay, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
just
cool.
Like the end of this episode.
Yeah, nothing went wrong. Wow, I'm really glad we got past Afghanistan. Man, the 80s were weird. Mm-hmm. Pat Robertson's Southern supporters are out in force, well-drilled and intensely committed. This is the primaries are going on at this time. Partly because of their organization, Vice President Bush's lead in the South no longer seems comfortable. Oh, wow, a right-wing blowhard famous for being on TV is leading in the polls in the Republican primaries.
Oh, God. He's going to be our next president.
Pat Robertson?
Yep.
Pat Robertson? Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a pit in my stomach about that.
Yeah, I'm really worried about it. I just saw this great...
If anyone can fuck it up, the Democrats can.
Yeah.
Hey, if you want to hear more thoughts on that, check out Politicked Off.
What's Politicked Off, Zach? No, now's a great time.
Yeah.
Politicked Off is a politics-related podcast, a current news weekly roundup with me and Patrick Winiger, who fans of this show may be aware of.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's the other Pat.
I'm the other Pat.
Yeah.
Wait, I thought you were the other Pat.
You're the other Pat to me.
Guys, you're both other Pats to me.
Aw,
thanks.
Each week we pick a topic in the news, and then we talk about it, and then we have a special guest on to do an interview.
Yeah. And it's recorded here.
At the Peach Pit Studios. Yeah,
right in the very room where we are.
Yeah. In fact, it's recorded around the exact same time that Patrick is recorded.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know if it's a matter of convenience as to why
it's
Zach is our
convenience.
Guest. And Patrick just
don't do him any favors.
Yeah.
Hey, I have a lot of thoughts on
Yeah, we just watched this episode.
Yeah.
When the Bow Breaks. I was worried because I heard it was going to be a Wesley episode.
Yeah.
And I will say this, I was not as disappointed as I thought it would be.
Good.
I was disappointed about things not related to Wesley.
Oh,
I thought Wesley came across as smart and precocious.
Yep.
I was disappointed with the way the writers handled plot-wise Wesley.
Yeah, we'll get into that later.
But the character I found fine.
Yeah, he wasn't the superhuman that he was, which is always bothering me about this character.
Yeah, because ultimately, I mean, spoiler alerts, but ultimately he doesn't save the day like you would expect him to. And
that's what I was worried was going to happen. Yeah.
But you know what? There was a weird thing, like, this is jumping ahead a lot, but there was like, they scanned him with this beam or whatever, and then the guy was like, you're a leader. You're the leader.
Yeah.
Because apparently...
Yeah, well, you got to have that. If it's a Wesley episode, it was contractually obliged to make Will Wheaton the... hero.
He's always very important in the episode.
This episode, like, before we start talking about it, reminded me, it's like, had a Lost quality to it, or like Lost was influenced by this episode, I think, because the plot revolves around this planet can't get pregnant anymore, which is a huge plot point in Lost that is never resolved. And then,
there's a lot of those.
And then there's also like, they keep, like, the guy weirdly calls Wesley, like, you're the leader, like, he's special inherently, which is another thing in Lost, which with Walt, that never gets resolved.
Oh, Walt just gets dropped.
Yeah.
Well, and this isn't the first time that we've heard that Wesley Crusher is special. The Traveler tells us, as well as tells us that time, space
and thought are all one thing.
They're all one thing, and that's very important.
Yeah. But before we jump too far ahead.
Anyway, I just thought, like, Damon Lindelof must have been influenced.
I wouldn't be surprised if Damon Lindelof was like influenced by the shittier parts of Star Trek. Look, I like Lost, but like he left so many.
I think the thing.
Around.
I think he was influenced by the fact that it was never resolved.
Right. He's like, oh wow, that was cool. Anyway,
let's get into it. Yeah.
So it starts off the Enterprise, and as we said, the establishing shot was not in space because they're just in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Why would you show that? So they're on the bridge and they're scanning around the Epsilon Minos system. And it's apparently the home of some legendary Atlantis type place. Riker is super into it. Yeah. He explains to the rest of the crew because they, I guess, have not heard this story.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that because Riker, he's like talking about this myth and he seems like he's high. Like he's just like stoned and talking about this story. And he has this really weird like quality to him. He's just like, let me tell ye Riker about this. And I was like, is this part of Riker's deal? That
Riker is high. So no, in my personal canon, Riker is high.
It just seemed like a weird, like, it was like they needed someone to say it, so they gave it to Riker.
No, but Riker wants nothing more than to travel space. Like, Riker loves being on the Enterprise.
Okay, so
that's like a core thing about him. If a few episodes ago, they kept talking about, like, what everybody's dreams were, and Riker's is to be the starship captain, and he would sacrifice anything else to be able to travel space. So he loves it. Yeah. That's already an established thing.
So, this story is that Aldea is this highly technologically advanced planet that has let computers do all of the hard work for them, and so they can devote their time to art and literature and culture and stuff like that. But to shield themselves from, you know, piracy or
marauders,
any kind of hostile races, they cloaked their planet, the entire planet, and have this very sophisticated shield. So the location is not known. It's rumored to be where they are now. And as it happens, it is.
We skipped over. The episode does establish something.
Oh,
where we have like a six-year-old running through the halls.
That's right. I forgot about this.
And his name is Harry, and he doesn't want to do calculus.
Right. A six-year-old is apparently doing calculus in this, which I only got as far as pre-cal, and I was like, fuck math.
Yeah,
like,
more evolved humans than we are.
Yeah, exactly. I had a C-plus in calculus when I was 20 years old. So.
Wow, way to go.
Thank you.
It's better than I did.
But then there's also this weird moment where like he runs into Riker. Like he's sprinting down the halls, and he runs into Riker. And Riker's just like, oh, Harry! Like, it was kind of like I had a Harry Potter thing. Like,
right.
You're a wizard,
you're
Harry.
You're a wizard, Harry.
Yeah.
But anyway, but that's sort of... So they're setting up... The establishing shot, I guess, is that... Yeah.
There are kids on board. You know, they're all doing classes that they don't like. I think those are the two things that they established.
Yeah. Right. And I think it's also a quality of the human race, right? Is that... that they're always striving for more and always trying to learn more.
Yeah.
That's set
So, well. Yeah, Harry's dad comes and yells at him and tells him to go to calculus. And, you know, that's when we get to this whole thing about Aldea. Anyway, the planet appears. So they have apparently found it. And this woman appears on the view screen, Rochella, I believe. Yeah, Rochella. And she is saying, look, hey, we're peaceful. We just have this shield because, you know, we didn't want to be attacked.
A very pretty...
Yeah, as it turns out, Brenda Strong, who is the ship captain in Starship Troopers.
Yeah.
She was in Spaceballs, too, I think. I looked, and it's like she has all of these, like, minor roles in tons of sci-fi stuff.
She is, like, the... She has that beautiful sci-fi look to her.
Right.
You know, she really seems like someone who would be a great Starship captain.
Especially in the greatest sci-fi epic of our time, Desperate Housewives.
Oh, yeah. She was also in Desperate Housewives. Yeah. Anyway, she says, oh, we're going to meet you. And then she beams aboard the ship immediately.
Right, which has never happened before.
Right.
She went right through the Enterprise.
Yeah, and she's with this old guy, Radu, who I thought his name was Ragu at first, and I thought that was funny. But I was wrong. It's Radu with a D. His eyes are kind of like squinting. Something is bothering him. And they have apparently heard of Riker.
Yes.
That
so they know him by name and reputation.
Yes. And then they invite him to a celebration on Aldea.
Well, they say they've been monitoring the communications, right?
Yeah.
Right. So they've been eavesdropping on the previous adventures that we've been on with them.
Yeah.
So they know all about these guys, and they're like, hey, you know, we've been watching you for a while.
We've been watching Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah, they've been watching season one. Hey, you know, Code of Honor, that was a little messed up. Kind of accidentally racist. Why did you make Yar fall in love with their captor? Right. What was the deal with that?
I really like the men's rights thing, so you think you're onto something.
Anyway, they give Picard this plastic cornucopia full of fake flowers, and they say, you know, we're having this celebration on Aldea. You're invited. So they immediately beam down. Then they take Riker, Deanna, Deanna Troi, and Dr. Crusher down with them.
Right. So they pick who goes.
They pick who goes. They say Riker and your two colleagues, and they take those two. Right. I wasn't ever explained why, because they mentioned on the ship is like, oh, that was an interesting choice of colleagues.
Yeah, they didn't explain it, did they?
Yeah, they just kind of pick people at random.
Right. Oh, yeah. Picard's just like, interesting choice.
And then that's it. They kind of leave.
I forgot to mention that we also saw one of the displays of Deanna Troi's powers actually being useful.
Yes.
Because she was able to sense where the planet was before they could find the shield. She was like, no, it's here. I can kind of feel it. And she can figure out that they want something from us. And and they feel they're too afraid to ask for it because they feel that it's very valuable.
Yeah.
Is her powers just sensing that there's a massive gravitational field?
No, her power is the power of empathy. So 9 times out of 10, it's like they have a hostile meeting and they leave it. And Deanna Troi's like, wow, that was really hostile. It's like, yeah, thanks, Deanna.
Yeah.
I could tell from the body language. It's like, yeah, you know, most people with, you know, functional empathy can.
She's an empath. So her mother is 100% Betazoid, who we've met her mother, who can clearly read minds. She's half human. Deanna Troi is half human, half Betazoid. So she can only read emotion, which usually characters are showing anyway, so we all understand that emotion.
It becomes useful, though, because she can sense it outside of the ship.
Right. That's when it's most
powerful. So, like, if they're in some kind of space battle or something like that, she could figure out what the other captain's thinking, kind of, or feeling at least.
Right.
And she was able to sense that there is a planet there even when the ship's sensors can't, and she was able to sense that they're hiding something. She's usually able to tell when someone is hiding something or lying.
That's so funny that just, like, you have this writing staff for this sci-fi show, and they're just like, yeah, and one of the characters is really good at figuring out emotions. Like,
right.
They're just creating a superpower for what they want to be able to do in the writer's room.
They know what girls are thinking all the time.
Well, they're kind of, Deanna's kind of the exact opposite of Data.
Right.
And I think that's kind of the point. So you get a lot of really interesting moments between the two of them. One who cannot understand human emotion at all, and one who understands it far too well.
Yeah, I don't know a ton about Star Trek, but I have an uncle that was super into the original series. And I remember him telling me one time that the whole relationship between Spock and Captain Kirk was supposed to be like these polar opposites. And it comes from like Greek tragedy or Greek drama or something. Yeah.
And I've been watching original series, and it's absolutely
right. You have a character that's super emotional and one that's very logical, and they're supposed to play off with each other.
Yep.
So you see that a lot with this.
And I think Picard has really proven himself to be driven by logic as well.
Yep.
Yeah. And code.
Yeah. Honor, and playing by the rules.
Right.
So anyway, so Riker, Troy, and Crusher are transported down to Aldea, and everyone seems pretty nice, and they sit down to this dinner. But then Radu is just like, oh yeah, we need your kids. You know, we'll give you some technology. It's pretty cool. We got cool technology.
Yeah, it's centuries ahead of yours.
Right, but we can't have kids, and you know, there's just not a lot of us here.
Yeah,
so
he starts by offering them to trade their children for technology.
Right.
But, you know, we just got to have some kids. And I like how Dr. Crusher points out, look, there may be some, or it's either Crusher or Troy, look, there may be some races that would be okay with this and not think that it's a big deal, but humans are strangely attached to their children. So there is no deal. There is no price that any parent would be willing
to pay. She says unusually attached.
Unusually attached.
Which might be true for humans.
Yeah, compared to other races.
Like, Klingons aren't. They would let their child die in battle and feel like it was an honorable thing to happen, whereas a human would jump in and intervene.
Right. You know, it's just like if there was dogs, sentient dogs, like, they would probably not really give a shit.
Right. Those insect people probably eat their young.
Oh, I'm sure.
Now, here's what I thought during the scene where they say, we want your children. Like, because I was like, just have Riker have sex with Rochella.
Right, totally.
They're infertile, though.
Yeah, but they don't know. They don't know if it's the men's fault or the women's fault. You know?
Well, and Riker.
Fault.
If you put Riker on a planet long enough, he's going to have sex with a person.
I know, exactly.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Like, don't they set up Riker?
They've watched all of their communications. They know what happens, right, when they bring Riker to a planet.
Right.
Yeah, they must know that he's a horn dog.
Yeah. It's not his fault. I always say this. Everyone blames Riker.
They're all consensual relationships.
Well, except for that cyber woman. That was consensual, but it was totally like a fantasy of his.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Minuet,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and plus they said, like, because in the beginning of the episode, like, when Rochelle is talking to them, like, she's sort of, she has this weird, like, back and forth flirting with Picard over the video screen, I felt. Like, they were setting up to be, like, a sexy hippie commune type thing.
Yeah, and nothing that thread was never explored.
No.
And so, yeah, said it's the weird, creepy guy.
And said,
kids.
It's like, yeah, we need your kids. They say no. They get beamed back aboard the ship. But then we see the sequence where this strange, like, beam takes all of these kids one by one and sends them down onto Aldea.
Which I think what it's doing is it's doing an analysis of all of them based on what their talents and skills are.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the beam's doing. And then it chooses probably, what is it, like 6 or 7 kids?
Yeah.
Because there's way more kids than that on the ship.
Right. Including our friend Harry.
Harry, of course. That's why we met Harry.
Part of while this is happening is this weird beam, kind of like someone is shining a flashlight into the Enterprise, goes on the bridge and like lands on Wesley's face. It's not explained what it is exactly. And they're like, oh, it's a scanner. You think it's going to hurt him. And then it disappears. And Wesley's like, oh, I was scared at first, but then it was nothing. And then he disappears.
Right.
So they've taken Wesley and several other nameless children and also Harry, the kid from the beginning.
Yeah.
They tried to make a deal. Enterprise said no. They took the kids anyway.
Right. Well, they have to.
Right.
Right? What choice do they have?
From their view, their entire, not just them, but their entire culture is dying because they can't have kids.
Right.
So they would adopt these kids into their culture, and even though they're not genetically Eldaean or whatever, they will continue the race.
Yeah.
Presumably by having sex with each other.
Yeah. Right.
They would have to have sex with each other because they can't have sex with anybody else.
Right. And also there's their parent figure, so that would be weird.
Right.
Yeah. So they've kidnapped the kids, essentially.
They did.
Yeah.
They've committed an act of, quote, utter barbarity.
Yeah.
Is that your Picard?
Utter barbarity. Yeah.
he's
supposed to be French, so yeah.
Utter barbarity.
So, Radu, like, tells them what happened. It was like, look, they're going to be fine. We got a nice little planet here. We're going to teach them how to be artists and, you know, whatever they want to be.
Yep.
We have the ability to teach them and to uncover their hidden strengths and abilities, and look, they're going to have a great time. Just please leave us alone.
Right. I also love how tiny this planet is.
Oh, it's very
small. They show you a map of it at one point, and it's like six rooms.
Right.
On the whole planet.
Yeah, but the planet itself is huge.
Is like, that just who's left?
It must be, yeah, it's like in their headquarters or whatever.
At that point, I just give up. Just be like, what, there's four of us? Let's just kill ourselves.
Let's just get on the Enterprise and see right. the rest of the universe.
Yeah. We go to this meeting in the conference room. All of the parents are understandably upset. Harry's dad is there. The little girl with the tribble, her parents that we've never met before are there.
It wasn't a tribble. It was a tribble doll.
It's a tribble doll?
Yeah, it's not a real one, right?
So it's like a stuffed bear something. Okay.
I don't think so, because it doesn't move. I think it's a doll.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a point where she's just kind of petting it.
Yeah.
Like back down on the planet.
Right.
And I'm like, is that a it's a tribble? Like it's a animal? Yeah.
So tribbles are from the original series. They at one point they take over the Enterprise. They're kind of like mice or rats, but they're super cute and weird looking.
Anyway, all of these parents are there in the conference room, and Picard is trying to lay out the situation. He's like, look, they're trying to negotiate prices for our children, basically. And they're like, what the hell? No, of course not. We need to get our kids back. Harry's dad is trying to say, look, can we just establish contact with our kids? Because I'm sure that they want to get in touch with us. We want to get in touch with them. And Picard's like, look, I promise you, we're going to do everything we can. We're going to get those kids back. So Picard does not seem interested in any kind of negotiation with this.
No, nor should he be.
Nor should he be.
Right.
I mean, Picard doesn't like kids, but he's not going to let the children of his crew just get kidnapped.
I mean, utter barbarity is officially a crime.
Yeah.
Against the Federation.
Yeah. And then back down on the planet, Wesley and all of these kids, they're like meeting foster parents, and they're all given like these skills to hone.
Right. So that scanner must have determined what these skills were.
I think that's
because
what it
was right
doing.
Away, because with Harry, he's like, I don't know how to... They give him like a tool to be a sculptor. And he's like, I've never sculpted before.
It's like, oh, here, you know, take this. You're going to learn how to use the button that makes sculptures good. little girl, you're going to learn how to play the instrument that makes music good for you.
Yeah,
right.
they give Harry a little like wand that shines light onto a block of wood and then carves it with the light. And it's funny because it's like it immediately just makes a sculpture just by pressing a button. But presumably, like, you still need sculpting talent and vision in order to make
it.
Yes.
It sounds, because with the musician, too, she had like a little, what looked like a Simon board. And apparently it's like, for the art and culture, we have tools that will carry out the technique for you. But the vision has to come from your inner talent.
Well, that seems like that kind of destroys the point, because I had an art teacher in high school, and his whole thing, he always told people, 80% of the drawing or 80% of the sculpture is in your eye. You already have it in your head. But what the talent is to put that into being.
Yes.
That is difficult to do. Yeah. That's the entire point.
Right. Well, and I would say craftsmanship is such a huge part of art, right?
Yeah, and the
and
tools...
And then it indicates style. Your style comes from how you can craft.
The tools to make a sculpture haven't really changed for like 2,000 years, probably even longer than that. It's like, yeah, you still use a hammer, you still use a chisel.
Yeah, the Dremel is like the biggest.
Right. The stuff you use to shape clay is like, most of it's your hands, some of it's these little tiny metal shaving things, and a pottery wheel is probably like the biggest invention. Yeah. And that's pretty much it. It just kind of feels weird that Star Trek decided to invent these things that makes art for you. But I guess that might be kind of the point of this world.
Well, that's the whole point. And that comes up again later, is that they've forgotten the basic skills that got them to where they are today, because they've had such advanced technology for so long.
Right. Yeah. They, like Harry in the beginning, have learned
calculus?
To undervalue learning as a developmental.
Yeah, right. And I think it's a great commentary on technology now, right? Yeah. Think about it. Writing, we write so much, but it's actually gotten a lot worse. Like, it's all, like, really short. Like, the majority of writing that's done today is really short, really quippy kind of things versus, you know, long, elegant poems and stuff.
Yeah, and I think there is, you know, that has its place. Like, everything... kind of has its place. I think there's fine. It's fine that a lot of people our age and younger, they write every day, you know, even if it is small text. But, you know, it's important to do other things too.
Right.
And I think that's kind of the what they were getting at, that, oh, you know, you also need to learn things that you may not think is important and focus on your gifts. Because I do think it's cool that they discovered these kids' gifts that weren't being encouraged on the Enterprise and pushed them to, you know, advance their skills in that and find their passion.
Think about what we know about art on the Enterprise so far, and it's pretty
pathetic.
It's just
pathetic. A bunch of, like, shitty sculptures.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. And everyone's playing classical music. Right. Like, there's not a new modern form of music.
Yeah,
what does
Riker do to decompress? He watches the same hologram of the three ladies playing the harp.
Right.
That's the media that they have.
Right, or he goes and he plays jazz trombone at New Orleans, right?
Right.
That, for them, that's like 400 years ago that style was created. Yeah. Like, nobody's out playing like a new kind of
Every
creativity.
Room is full of like hideous, useless sculptures.
Right.
The conference room is just full of spray-painted gold foam carvings of the Enterprise.
Right.
Like,
there is a cool little cross-section of the Enterprise on the bridge, though. You know, a little painting there.
Is it? What are you talking about?
That. Where is that?
I pointed it out to you, like, when Picard kind of walks through the bridge, you, in the background you see just... Because it looks useless as a map. Like, it's just a top-down view and then a side view of
the
Enterprise.
It's supposed to be a map.
Right, yeah. But it looks just like a stylized painting.
Well, but see, I think the human race has become, you know, because again, it's the future. They're more evolved than us. They're different than the human race of today. They've established that in Star Trek. It's a very science-driven culture now.
Right. And I think I'm not speaking in defense of the Aldeans, but I do think there are a lot of people, probably us included, that are more inclined towards a lot of creative activities, maybe don't excel at math and science, and that's fine.
Yeah. It's like the Aldeans are more like Montessori school than the Enterprise
is. Oh, totally.
Their whole point, though, and this is where we kind of get into it further, Wesley, though, does excel at computers.
Right.
That's his gift. So he just goes straight to the computer, the custodian, as they call it.
Yes.
This is the supercomputer that basically runs their society for them.
Which, of course, is... the moment that we all know as an audience, knowing who Wesley Crusher is, that's the biggest mistake you could ever make, is let him near your supercomputer.
Now, here's the thing. We were just talking about how this episode has a lot of thematic potential.
Right. Yep.
I think when this scene with Wesley at the computer is where the plot of this episode really starts to unravel.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. Because he's asking all these questions of Duana, who's Radu's wife, I guess. He's asking her all these questions about how it works, and she's like, look, I don't know. Just ask the computer. He's asking, like, where the power source is, what's behind this door. He's like, I don't know.
Yeah, but he never asked the computer what the power source is.
Right.
Right, and he was given level 3 clearance to ask the computer.
He's like, what's its power source? She's like, I don't know. You have to ask the computer. He's just like, computer, what's Alexandria up to?
I know, which I think is the weirdest function, is that there's... supposedly cameras in everybody's house, and you could just watch anybody at any moment.
The Enterprise doesn't have that?
They do. The Enterprise does these really weird things sometimes where there's like a moving camera behind somebody.
Mm.
And it's like, where is the object that's following that person to be able to capture it?
It's, you know, it's just a little drone. They got drones flying through the hallway.
Microscopic drones.
Microscopic
GoPros. They got GoPros and drones.
Yeah.
They must.
Anyway, back on the ship, Riker is saying, all right, look, Data found not a hole in the shield, but like little fluctuations.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be used to maybe send in an away team, not a whole bunch of people, just a few, you know, for some kind of rescue mission. See what we can do with that. And the other question that this brings up is that, well, it's kind of weird that there's this flaw in the super secret technology that's supposed to be amazing.
Yeah, but it's not a flaw. What it is when they beam somebody else through, it creates the disruption.
Yeah.
So they need to be able to open a little door or window to send their own people through, and this is the moment where they found that door.
So they can get through the Enterprise's beam shields.
With no problems.
But they can't get through their own without disabling it?
Well, because of how powerful this shield is.
Yeah. So
well, first, Data is just like, well, I could brute force the shield, but there's going to be so many permutations.
Yeah, and the captain just tells him, like, all right, work on that.
Yeah, 1-1-1-1, 1-1-1-2.
Yeah, and I think this is a little bit later when, what does Picard say? He's like, the impossible is just that until it's achieved. And Data just like stares at him.
Like, this will literally take me a million years.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So Data's working on that, and Riker's working with the Forge to find a way through the hole. But the idea is send an away team, find the power source for the computer thing, and shut it down. And then Picard is going to try to keep the Aldans distracted by talking to them and negotiating and keeping them wrapped up in that, because they clearly don't know what the hell they're doing with this computer.
No.
So the away team can do whatever it wants as long as they can find a way down to the planet.
And plus, once you're on the planet, there is no defense system whatsoever.
Oh,
there's no security.
They're peaceful.
They're super peaceful. So it's really getting through, you know, this initial barrier.
Yeah. But the danger is people on the Enterprise aren't going to accept anything less than all of their kids back, and the Aldeans aren't going to give them up.
Mm-hmm. So the Aldeans have a their like big threat is that where you're getting at?
Oh no, go ahead.
Like, their big threat is that they can fire a repulsor beam at you, so that they fire a repulsor beam at the Enterprise, which is sort of like, you know, a shot across the nose or whatever, that sends them back 3 days?
Yeah. At warp 9. That's the fastest warp.
Oh, that's the fastest? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So then, and then they say, like, they get back 3 days later, and they're just like, if you don't negotiate with us, we'll send the Enterprise so far away, by the time you get back, your kids will be grandparents.
Yeah.
Which I think is so interesting, and it does speak to this culture. They could just do that right now, but they so badly want to negotiate.
Right.
When they hold all the cards.
Yeah, well, which is because when Picard and Crusher are down there, like, they're still trying to negotiate, like, compensation. And they're trying to explain to these guys, like, look, this is why compensation won't work. Like, we're not going to, there's no price for children in our culture. But they're still sympathetic. They're like, look, I get it. Your entire society is dying. You feel you have no other choice. You don't want to hurt these kids. We know, but we need them back.
Yeah, it is strange that these guys are fine with stealing these children and want to buy them, but they don't want to just commit the crime.
Yeah, just go all out.
They don't want to commit. They don't want to be utter barbarians.
Yeah. No. Well, see, they're not.
Right.
They're desperate. That's what I find so interesting about this episode. It's like, it's a pure act of desperation, and both sides know this.
Yeah.
And they're trying to figure out the solution, but the Aldarians don't know how to discover their own solution at this point. It's because like they're so used to their technology and tools.
But it's also the Aldarians, like, still have this sort of, they have these morals that are corrupted in the sense that they don't know how to put them in context, right?
Right. Yeah.
So they say,
they're absolutes.
They say, we'll basically kidnap your kids.
Right.
But we're not going to outright kidnap them. We still have morals. We still have, we're still an advanced society.
That kind of feels worse to me. You know, if you're still kidnapping people, just be a brute, you know?
Yeah.
Don't sugarcoat it with this bullshit that you're somehow better. You're kidnapping children.
But they have to. Again, they're desperate people. They're not evil.
Okay.
Right?
Well, when this happens, okay. Wesley scans one of the people and, like, slips the medical recorder to Crusher. So when they go back onto the ship, they have information about what is the deal.
Right.
With
it's a
people.
Very clumsy.
It's a very clumsy handoff, yeah.
What's so funny, and they're not caught doing this. And
no.
It's very blatantly being
Well,
done.
Their eyes are all messed up. Right?
Right, yeah.
So that's when they get sent back by the repulsor beam, you know, like 3 days. But while they're doing that, they're traveling back to the planet almost immediately at warp 9. So 3 days have passed by the time they get back to Aldea. Crusher is poring over this medical records that she got covertly from Wesley. And this is where the episode completely turned for me and started to suck.
It was so good for a while there. I was hooked.
So she's analyzing the scan, and they find that their sterility and their sensitivity to light, it's not a genetic thing. It's environmental.
Boom,
and it's because
boom.
Of the ozone layer. Much like what happened to the Earth in the 21st century.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. It's just like they shoehorned in this Captain Planet thing, which I'm sympathetic to that message. That's fine. But it came out of nowhere.
See, here's why I'm saying it started to unravel. And I'm completely on your page. I think it would have been much more interesting just to say that the sterility, the environmental factor was the computer. That their reliance on the computer was what caused their sterility.
Yeah.
But everyone it had is their, the computer.
Right.
It still is a computer. Yeah. Because a computer is what's destroying
but
the environment.
But then it makes that, you know, ozone layer thing, and then they made a very ham-fisted, kind of preachy present-day message that I felt just kind of diluted it.
Right, I think...
Like, they could have made it... result. Everyone had their laptops on their crotches this whole time. Or that's why they're all sterile, and that would have been better.
Yeah, just simplify it. It's just like this technology has deprived you of, like, fending for yourself. Like, you don't... You can't...
Like an idiocracy kind of situation.
Yeah, I mean, kind of, but more like everyone is... So it's kind of like what people said about the Roman Empire. Is like, they depended... The aristocracy and the freemen depended so much on slaves to do basic, you know, manual labor and farming for them that no one knew how to do anything. And eventually the slaves outnumbered them and the society couldn't function.
Right.
So it's kind of like this with, you know, the computer is doing everything. They have no idea how to rebuild their society. They can't even know that the computer's hurting them.
Or even that they forgot how to fuck, you know?
Right, yeah.
Because the computer used to tell them when to
there's
fuck.
There's no sex ed.
Yeah. But it is, again, ultimately the computer that is causing destruction.
Right. But it's through another layer, and it feels like they kind of just stapled that on.
Okay.
Yeah, because there's at least twice in the episode she says, like, much like in the 21st century when the ozone
layer...
They say
it three times, and I agree with the sentiment. My thing is it just kind of feels tacked on to an episode when it didn't need it. You know, she could have gotten the medical records like, oh, it's environmental. It's coming from the computer. Radiation from the computer, and that could have been it.
Right. Yes.
I have one more plot complaint, but we can get to it eventually.
All right. So back on the planet, Wesley is like trying to do this Bobby Sands H-block hunger strike and try to tell everyone to not eat for 3 days. Because remember, it takes 3 days for the ship to get back to express their discontent. Because that's the only way that they can do it. They can't fight back against them. They're all children.
Like, if we die, then they...
Then it's right. On them.
If we don't get to fucking age, then they're screwed.
Yeah.
Sorry, should I not be...
No. Go ahead.
So basically...
No, you can swear.
They're willing to kill themselves by starvation. In order to put the blood on the Aldeans' hands.
Right.
Because they'll eat when they get turned back to the Enterprise.
Right. How awesome is that?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
That's messed up that he's making these kids do this.
But it is their only form of retaliation.
It's their only form of retaliation is to attempt to force them to send them back to their parents because they all want to go back to their parents.
Yes.
Even though they're learning all these new skills, they want their parents back.
Well, because ultimately they're humans.
Yep.
The bond between a parent and child is not only ridiculous on the parent's end, it's ridiculous on the child's end as well.
Right. They do have a very nice scene where Harry has made a dolphin sculpture.
Yeah.
From his, or the tool has made a dolphin sculpture.
Right. It took the dolphin from Harry's mind.
Yes. Yeah.
No one knows what a dolphin is because their seas are all messed up too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But they do know what a fish is, which is strange. And Harry says, with a slip of the tongue, I guess. Says, like, you know, my dad is an oceanographer. My dad. And then he's just like, oops. Because he sees how sad that makes his kidnappers look.
Yeah. What's funny about that is his father is wearing a blue uniform, which means he's medical staff. Right?
That's right. I think.
So what's he doing on the Enterprise? Well, I guess he could be...
A marine biologist.
He probably studies oceans
or
something.
I guess maybe it just means science, maybe not medical.
Yeah, some kind of biological science, yeah.
But aren't they all science?
Well, not is red not like biological. Military?
No, so red is
officer,
is
right?
Officers or bridge employee.
Yellow security or engineering or weapons.
Yeah, yellow is more operations, and then blue is science and medicine.
Okay, forgive my ignorance.
No. And it changes.
I had to learn
too.
This too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Enterprise comes back, and Radu is pissed because he's like, "Hey, you need to come down here and make these kids eat," which you can't do. Picard. Is like, well, I can't really do that, but they send an away team. They're able to get through that little hole.
Yes.
Riker and Data are taking the computer apart, or the custodian, sorry. And Crusher is trying to convince Radu of the cause of the infertility. And this is where we kind of get to that, ham-fisted ozone layer thing again. It gets brought up.
There's a great moment where it's Data and Riker.
They're at the computer?
Yes.
Beam down?
Yeah.
But like so they have to time it perfectly right in this fluctuation, right? And then Worf goes, like, Transporter Bay, now! And then we still have the 30-second animation of beaming down.
Well, the Aldean's transporter is much quicker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Which I guess makes sense. Crusher is also trying to convince them that, hey, this is going to happen to the kids, too. It's environmental.
Yes.
It's not genetic. So this doesn't even matter what you're doing. It helps no one. It hurts everyone. So just give us our kids back. You know, we can help cure you. And, you know, dismantle the computer and the problem should be solved.
Yep.
Yeah, okay, so here's kind of where my plot point comes in.
Okay.
So Data and Riker go to the computer and Data's just like, I can disable the inputs on the computer. That's all I can do.
Right.
Now, that turns into a thing where, like, the Aldeans can't beam anybody out because they can't input into the computer anymore, right?
Right. Yes.
I thought it would have been interesting. Maybe it was too complicated. To, like, Wesley has learned how to input on the computer, right? So he's sort of the inside defector.
This is what they should have done.
And then, so it would have been interesting to then Wesley tries to take over the computer, but Data has inadvertently sabotaged Wesley. I just thought it could have been a neat little conflict.
That would have been neat.
Conflict.
They
there.
Did not do that.
They didn't do that.
This is the point where Star Trek The Next Generation always screws up in season one.
There's just no climax to the whole thing.
The endings are ridiculous. Yeah. It just suddenly ends. They set up all these dominoes, and instead of like pushing them over and us getting to watch them fall, it's suddenly like they just kicked them all over at once.
Right. So the character of Rochella has become really attached to this girl, Alexandra.
Yeah, the girl with the stuffed tribble.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And then she's the one who's just like,
She changes her mind immediately.
No, they're right. Like, we do need to let the kids go. Like, this is the wrong thing. And I'm like, what changed your mind? I do not understand.
Yeah.
Like, the change, there was no change that occurred.
Yeah.
In these people.
But they finally convince them that the computer has been, like, holding their hand this whole time and also harming them because they try to beam everyone away and they can't because Data's hacked the computer. You know, finally they seem convinced by this. And Harry is about to go beam up with Starfleet or whatever, but you know, he sees his adopted father. They ask if he wants to keep the dolphin, and he says, no, you keep it. I'll make more. But then they go by that mysterious door that Wesley asked about, and that no one knew what was behind it. I guess they never went in there. But it's the energy core for the computer, and it's massive and apparently emitting an enormous amount of energy and pollution that is destroying the planet.
See, that's what I mean, though, but it's not the ozone layer. It's the
energy from
the computer.
It is a computer, but
which destroyed the ozone, which
caused radiation from the solar system to go.
But why wasn't it radiation from the computer?
I think that would have been easier, and it would have gotten the same message.
It would
across.
Have been simpler, I think.
You know, because it's still pollution.
Well, right. Here's what I think. The theme needs to be that their reliance on this technology, and they've gotten away from learning and curiosity and patience and all these things that make humanity what it is. And it's like not like this, shoehorned in environmental message about the ozone layer. I just think like you had such a strong theme going, and then you tried to ham-fist in a scientific message.
Right.
To it.
They had two morals, and it would have been easier if they just stuck with the original one.
Right.
That this
right.
thing is doing all their work for them. They can't function as a society, and that's what's killing them. But then they, you know, threw in the present day, by the way, this is just like what's happening on Earth. It's like, no, we can get that. You just have to show instead of tell us.
And here's another reason why the ozone thing doesn't work is because, like, if their message to us, the audience, is like, hey, you should address the ozone layer thing. Like, that's not related to technology being, you know, it's like, that's like what fossil fuels and like.
Yeah, old technology.
And nuclear energy. I mean, I am assuming that this core thing is nuclear power.
Yeah,
right?
Which was a big thing in the 80s.
Right, which was a big thing in the 80s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And our technology being fossil fuels, being all sorts of ways that we generate energy, is what's destroying our planet, is
right.
it not? So I think that that's how they got there. Now, I agree with you that it added like a whole, like, what are we talking about all of a
right,
sudden?
Right, yeah.
But
I don't think they're wrong. I just think, I feel like it was stapled on to the plot that
but
was
here's
already
the
going
thing.
Okay.
This is Star Trek. It's science fiction. It's not space fantasy like Star Wars. So they
right.
have to have reasons for everything.
I get that.
There's like real rules and things that they set up, and there's always a scientific explanation for what's going on. So maybe The thought was, it can't just be radiation alone. Radiation has to have an impact on something.
Oh, okay.
Right? And what it's having an impact on is the environment.
Yeah, I get that. I just kind of feel like it added another layer onto the story that made it more complicated than it needed to.
Yeah.
And then it was easily fixed because they're leaving. And the last thing that happens when, you know, everyone gets their kids back, Harry's father, you know, makes peace with his kid and he tells him, well, you know, but you still got to learn calculus, but you're going to be a sculptor. So that's cool.
Yeah.
They reseed the ozone layer.
Yeah. And Enterprise is able to do that.
And they heal everyone.
Right.
So everyone is fine again. And Picard goes, the legend will die, the people will live.
Yes.
And they leave.
Yeah. Well, Picard gets a sweet flower from that cute little girl.
From the cute little girl, and he hates kids.
Yeah, there's a cute little
everyone laughs
shot
at
the
him.
End.
Yeah.
See, that's another thing that's also complicated because, like, they had that myth at the beginning that Riker was really excited about. And now, like, the legend will die, but the people will live. And it was like, well, what was the point of the myth? Like, what's the, is there a lesson to learn from?
Don't put a cloaking device on your planet, I guess.
I guess it was.
The cloaking device didn't hurt them at all, though.
Well, it was powered by the
It was powered by the computer. Oh, okay.
That did.
See, that's the thing is like.
Just make it about the computer.
Maybe cloaking the planet and trying to withdraw from the universe made the energy, like, trap the energy in there, and that's what irradiated them or something.
Yeah, but it didn't go there.
It was just like the
cloaking device was just, you know, an effect of the technology that they had.
Right.
But they did say that the thing that's protecting them is also causing them harm. So I think they implied that the cloaking device sped it along.
Is what destroyed the ozone layer?
Right. Powered by this radioactive thing.
Oh, okay.
Again, it gets kind of complicated.
Yeah.
It definitely gets a little complicated. So, Zach, this is a part of Pat Trek where we like to rate the episode. We do it on a 3-point scale. Mm-hmm. If you loved the episode, you think this is like a great one to watch, you must check it out. You must share it with your friends. Like, it's a great episode. We set it to kill. If it's okay, if it comes up in the queue and it's time to watch it in the order, yeah, go ahead and check it out. That is set to stun. And then if you want to avoid it at all costs because it's just a heaping pile of garbage, you'll leave it in the holster. So what do you think? What do you think of this episode?
I think it's set to stun. As we were saying, I think I was really intrigued by the episode. Like, and I understand that season one is relatively weak
or
whatever.
Kind of rough.
But I was pretty engaged by the themes they were building, and I thought the story was really compelling up until about the last act. I thought the last act kind of really all fell apart for me. And that's why I can't say that I'm amazed at the end. So I'm the one with set to stun.
Cool. Patrick?
Yeah. I'm going to echo what Zach said. It's going to be set to stun for me. And it was good up until they introduced this other thing onto the plot that I felt just didn't need to be there and complicated it. And that was the ozone thing. The ozone thing could have been from the beginning, or it could have been the computer thing, and they could have stayed with that, but just pick something.
See,
one of those things.
I'm just going to say, I think it was ham-fisted, but I would have been okay with the ozone thing if I bought the character change in people like Rochella, where it was like, if we had an emotional climax where they decide, yes, we do have to give your kids back.
Right.
I don't think that I was convinced that.
Right, yeah, because the thing with the ozone thing is it was such an important part of the plot, and it was very, very strongly brought up, but it was only brought up 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
We just never really heard about it.
And I don't think that we got a very good reason why, like the same reason why they kidnapped the kids but didn't just do it outright was never really resolved.
But I will say, you know, the conflict between the parents on the Enterprise and the people on Aldea, you know, they had opposing motives, but they were both understandable. That was cool because, you know, obviously you don't want to give up your kids. You don't want to see your entire planet die. Those are at loggerheads, and I thought that was really well done. And I like that Wesley was a little toned down.
Yeah.
I was a fan of Wesley in this episode, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's big.
I normally hate that guy.
Right.
But,
well,
you know that impressed me.
Yeah. For all the reasons that you guys have stated, I also think that this is a set-to-stun episode. But I want to say this. I love Picard in this episode. We didn't talk about him very much, but Picard in this episode, when he's handling those negotiations, played by Patrick Stewart, who's, of course, an amazing actor, him and Brett Spiner, I've said it before, are what saves season one. Not quite enough data, but Picard did an amazing job in this episode. And for the first two acts, I was hooked. I was in it. But, you know, you guys are absolutely right. And this is a symptom of season one where it's like they suddenly run out of time. And they just end the thing.
Yeah.
Like nothing, like they build up all this amazing stuff. And then, boop, it's over.
You reminded me of two great Picard moments this episode. The first is, like we come in from an act break and he walks in from another room into the bridge. He's just like, any updates on Eldea?
Yeah.
It's like, there's this
what have you been doing?
Huge crisis going on. What else were you doing on the ship? You said presumably captain stuff.
Yeah. You know, he's still got to run a ship.
But I would be so distracted if I have that stuff to do.
That's why you're not the captain.
I know, I guess. And the other moment was when Riker, in the very beginning, was sharing the myth of Eldea. Like, he's just like, he's sort of waxing poetic about this thing.
Right. He's super into it.
And there's just a shot of Picard just like giving like a little smirk and like he's shaking his head.
Well, he doesn't believe in it.
Yeah. He thinks it's just a myth.
Yeah, but it's like they showed him how he's sort of bemused by Riker's... like almost childlike wonder at these myths and stuff. And I just thought it was a very telling moment of like Picard, like Riker reminds Picard about the adventures that are about to unfold.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought it was a cool, subtle little character moment that I enjoyed.
Yeah. That's awesome. I mean, I think it's a good episode. I like it.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's good. And again, you know, it's good for season one, definitely.
And that's the thing is that Set to Kill, even a low Set to Kill, seems like a high standard. I think they really could have just fixed the climax of this episode and I would have thought it was Set to Kill.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Completely agree. Well, is there anything you guys want to talk about before we get out of here?
Listen to Politicked Off, me and Zach's show. It's also on the Peaches and Hot Sauce Network. We're about to record another episode in a couple minutes.
Not in podcast time, but in real time.
Right, in real time. And please rate this show on iTunes. And I believe we're on the Google Play Store.
We are.
Still. So keep listening. And thanks to everyone that gave us all those great reviews and stuff. We're obviously very flattered because this is just a weird idea that we had and did not expect nearly as many people to listen to it as they do. So I just want to say thank you.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I want to read one of those reviews really quickly because it's probably the reason why I do this show. This is by Arnmaker. It's called, the subject line was Hooked Me on TNG. I never watched Star Trek much, but I started listening to this and following along episode by episode with the idea that I should watch at least a full season of Trek as a lover of nerd culture. I'm midway through season 3, so that says quite a bit. These guys got me hooked. And though I'm far ahead in the series, I'm still listening to the Patricks wade through those heady first few episodes before the show really hits its stride in season 2. Surprisingly, for a new podcast, and unlike TNG, the Patricks have settled quickly into an easy back and forth without a bunch of filler conversation, which I really appreciate. They are funny, perceptive, and on point.
Hell yeah, dude. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that review.
Yeah, we're still waiting on that check, CBS and Paramount Pictures. Got you also, another loyal customer.
Don't sue us.
Yeah, please don't sue us.
For the vivid narration that makes you feel like you're watching.
Right, absolutely. But it's reviews like that that are so cool to me because I've always been such a big Star Trek fan. And the fact that we turn somebody on to it, that really just makes my day.
Well, listen to Politicked Off. We'll turn you on to American politics and weekly news.
Hell yeah.
Is there anything else you want to talk about, Zach?
No, that's good. If you did that, that would make me happy.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can also
that's the only thing that will make him happy.
There's nothing else I have, please.
You can also listen to my other podcast called Making New Friends. That's part of Peaches and Hot Sauce. It's a blast. It's a fun show. You can follow me on Twitter at Pat Likes a Tweet because Facebook is for noobs. And I think that's it.
The legend will die. The people will live. Peaches. Hot Sauce. Peaches. Hot Sauce. Hot sauce, peaches, hot sauce, peaches, hot sauce, it's your peach.